Welcome to the For Narcotics Anonymous podcast. Here we share audio recordings of NA members sharing their experience, strength, and hope. If you are a drug addict or think you have a drug problem, you are welcome to attend an NA meeting. Go to www.nahelp.org/meetings to find a meeting near you. On this website, you will also find more information about the Narcotics Anonymous program. Thanks for listening to this recording.
God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can. There was no difference. Anyone got less than a year or less clean here? How many are you here? Come up here. All right. The real issue is, this book saved my life. Basic text is important, but this great book saved my life. And the reason I want to tell you that, because I met a guy named Joseph Proctor from Memphis, Tennessee. Joseph Proctor became my sponsor. Joseph, this is not the great book he gave me. This is one that was made for me purposely by a friend of mine named Hank from Florida. It's a leather-bound one that he put his tender love and care in. He made three of them back then. The whole book has my name on it. We got number two. Hank kept number one, and the third one went to Vito. The first three leather-bound books he made, I sent him the insides because I wanted it done on good paper. I wanted the 28 bound paper in them. And I printed these on my printer at home and sent them to him. But to do something like this here, Italian leather, it would cost $100 for this book. He did it out of a labor of love. And it treasures me that a man would care enough about me to do a labor of love in that sense. That's the importance of the great book to me, because of Joseph Proctor's involvement in the writing of the basic text. That was a miracle. I think you met Joseph at the Second World Lit Conference, Bo, right? That's where he showed up? And then He got involved, and Joseph not only became my sponsor, he became my friend. And You know, Bo went to the first, he went to the first East Coast convention. He met another man there, George R. from Bucks County. I heard some talk here about, I'm only 19. George cleaned up when he was 17. And he and his group down in Newville, PA, met another guy named Bob P. from Pittsburgh. All right, third East Coast Convention chair, who was out in Pittsburgh getting NA off the ground. And Bob went to World Service Conference and he became the World Public Information Chair. And George met him, and George said, "We were using the 12 and 12 AA book in our rooms." And Bob told him, "You can't do that no more." And George went back home, and because we didn't have the Mid-Atlantic region yet. It was Eastern Pennsylvania region at that moment of time. He went back home, and he got an inspired bunch of young people fired up. Bucks County, Pennsylvania, was mostly young people from the age of 16 up to about 18, 19 years old. They were fired up. I got involved with those people before I knew anything about the literature movement. I walked through the doors of Narcotics Anonymous in 1979. November the 8th, the day I wanted to die, I planned my suicide. There was no hope. There was nothing there for me. I made a decision how to die properly. That night, I was going to commit mass murder. I made a decision to commit murder because the churches wanted this bar shut down. Kind of funny, it was called the Friendly Tavern in Allentown, Pennsylvania. It was anything but friendly. You could walk in there at 3, 4 in the morning, knock on the door. If you knew the knock, you'd get in. And when you walk in the bathroom, I never did dope. Everyone's talking about I was a dope fiend. That's what we talked about back then. I knew nothing about that. I knew how to get wasted. I knew how to get off and what I was doing. But I looked down on heroin addicts back then. I despised them. I walked in that bar, that walls were full, that bathroom was full of blood from shooting up in there. Everything, prostitution, gambling, drug dealing was happening in that place. It's the same bar that started to bring me to my bottom. Why do I say that? Because in 1978, I went in that bar. I hustled some Colombian that night for about 10 grand because I was a shuffleboard artist. I prided myself on playing shuffleboard back then. And I took that man for 10 grand and I let him get close, only close. Close enough to keep him putting his money on the table, thinking he can get it back. By the end, he had no money. It was all in my pocket. That night, he murdered my friend. That night, he let my friend on the doctor's lawn in a Colombian necktie. Anyone knows what a Colombian necktie up? It's not a pretty sight. It bothered me so much when them cops picked me up for 3 days interrogating me and showed me the pictures of my friend that I made a deal with the cops. You find him, I testify. I find him, he disappears, and you don't look. They found him, and I had to testify. I lived up to my word. I made sure that man never saw the light of day again. But the situation that happened, I wasn't right after that. And I couldn't get high no more. They sent me to this place because I wouldn't go to work no more. I just stopped going to work. Life is not worthwhile living, so what's a job? I worked in the Bethlehem Steel in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. had a great job, and people were looking, what the hell's wrong with you? You got a great job, you're making great money, and you won't go to work? Life meant nothing to me anymore. What's a job if life doesn't mean something? You got no goals. The goals were gone. The only thing I could think, I was a walking corpse at that moment of my life. I never talk about that part from 78 when I put me in a place called White Deer Run. The owner of that place was the first East Coast Convention speaker up in Bucknell, where Bo went. And George met Bo, and he took our input from writing up steps up Bo, and they realized they were on the same parallel line. And George got involved with the basic tax, and so did that group from down in Bucks County. Them young people got involved with that basic tax. But being in that place with that man, realizing rehabs don't work. Why do I say that? Because I watched him get everyone in there with a state penitentiary person in that rehab. I was the only guy with Blue Cross Blue Shield from the Bethlehem Steel. And I used to confront him and let him know, you're not going to throw me out because you're not getting a replacement. You're not getting that 8 weeks paycheck. See, what happened with the state penitentiary, after you're there 2 weeks, he already got paid for the 8 weeks. After 2 weeks, he'd send you back to the penitentiary, and they sent him another person and paid for another 8 weeks. And I watched that. And I realized that this was a con. And I had a lot of anger. Then I had a woman there. A bunch of them people moved to Florida from that rehab. I remember that well. They emerged down in Florida in N.A., a lot of them. I went back home to the steel mill they said you're going to use. I still remember the day I was leaving. I went to get my 20 grand out of my account that I had up there. I remember them sending me back to see my therapist and some other guy who ended up being on the board of trustees later. Comical. My counselor was on his knees begging me to surrender my money to them or I'm going to use. Imagine that. Surrender my money or I'm going to use. I still remember that day well. And then the other guy's crying. And I looked at him and said, both of you better get off your freaking knees right now or I'm going to have my boot through your face. I'm going to get my money. I'm calling my attorney up and I'm going to get my money right now. And they gave me my money. And I left that hill and never went back. I stayed clean for 15 months, not because I had a program, not because I didn't know what to do with my life. When I went back out, and I don't call it a relapse, I was just waiting to get off again. I was just waiting to use. I was waiting for the first emotional issue to hit me hard. I had a little daughter back then that my wife abandoned in 1985. I had to raise this little girl. I got full custody because I proved her unfit. 1979, she kidnapped my daughter. And I didn't know how. I went back on a run for 3 months. And that 3 months was hell. I had a conscience. I couldn't bury the conscience anymore. And that's what took me to November the 8th of planning my death. I got 2 o'clock in the morning, a woman called me up and asked me for 5 minutes of my time. And I said, Ann, I can give you that. She told me she read my name in the paper. I said, that's tomorrow morning. You got deja vu? Tomorrow morning, I'll have the front page. It was 3 months early. I got picked up for assault and battery with attempted murder on a police officer. Because I was an angry human being. I hated. I didn't discriminate. I hated everyone. I couldn't take the pain of life anymore. I made a decision to die because I couldn't take the pain. I couldn't take the bearing of my little daughter being kidnapped. And the system wouldn't do a thing for my little daughter. But it had to happen for me to get clean. It had to happen for that miracle when that woman called me and I gave her 5 minutes and it turned into this day. That's the miracle. 5 minutes it turned into this day because God chose me. I didn't choose this way of life at that moment. He chose me. I celebrate November the 16th because that's the day I made the decision that I needed help to get clean. It wasn't November 8th where I made the decision to die. From the 8th to the 16th, I didn't use. But November the 16th, I made a decision to stay clean. That's what I celebrate my clean date from, that moment forward. Not from the 8th. I waited on the 16th when I hit a bottom and knew I couldn't do this anymore. I couldn't handle the pain of life. I want to tell you a miracle that Jimmy Kinnon told me. And this makes so much sense. When he told me we got to deal with the things that would take us out there time and time again. You know, it's not the drugs. The drugs don't take us out there. We pick up, yes, but it's not the drugs that took us there. It's our emotions. Our emotions take us back out there. I don't care how many of you have horrors from your childhood or things that happened that changed your life. None of us could handle that pain. That pain of life got me here to Narcotics Anonymous. All them years of using, I don't talk about using, but all them years of using got me here. I used from the age of 5 to the age of 26. They say you're the age where you picked up. I had a 5 years mentality when I got here. I might have been a lot more educated, but I had a 5 years mentality emotionally. I knew nothing but addiction from birth. My father was an addict. He may not have used everything I used, but he was an addict. He was physically violent. I've been raped in my own home as a child. I don't want to hear you don't know what it is to be raped because I do. I know the disgust and the dirt I carry throughout my life. I know that stuff, folks. I want to tell you what happened to me, though, is Narcotics Anonymous is the miracle of the steps. These 12 steps changed my life. A man that Joseph Proctor has put in my life because he's a man that could touch me inside. Joseph Proctor, I use his full name. He has passed. He died on his lawn in Memphis, Tennessee. He left the hospital with pneumonia, and he died there. He had spent 2 weeks on the phone with that man. He called me for the first time in my life for 2 weeks straight. When I got the call that he died that day, it broke my heart because I know what Joseph did for me. Joseph found, you know how he found Narcotics Anonymous? Because somebody cared enough to put a little white book in every library in the United States of America. Joseph's story will tell you he found a little white book and called that number. It was Jimmy Kinnon. It was Jimmy Kinnon that picked the phone up. Joseph started the first meeting in Memphis, Tennessee, from finding a little white book. And he believed in total absence of any mood-changing substance, mineral, or chemical. That's the miracle, that man was put in my life that could touch me when I met him and he hugged me. And I don't care who you are, folks, if you get a hug from Joseph Proctor, I'm going to tell you, and you get that rub down. All right? And if you're a man, it's going to do some shit inside of you. It's going to bring some old shit back up. I just got told the stories. People somewhere around here passing a rumor I'm homophobic. I'm not a scared no man. I can tell you something. But when Joseph touched me inside, he brought all that garbage out from my childhood. I'd say I was raped in my own bedroom. I was raped in my own bedroom. But then I was molested by men as a child because they would, child, whatever they want to call them, people that will prey on children. Pedophiles show up at baseball games and they find kids like me. And then they play the games. And you're scared and you don't know what to do. And you can't tell no one back then because the police department called you a liar. Your parents called you a liar, so you buried it inside. You stuffed it. I don't believe in I over E. I believe in something Narcotics Anonymous where the I and E should be side by side. Your intellect and your emotions should be side by side. They should be balanced by God through our steps. God balances my intellect and my emotions. I do not act out on emotions. I don't bury them with intellect anymore either, though. That brought me to the end of my addiction. Intellect, burying and burying for years, not knowing how to talk about these issues, feeling like dirt, feeling like scum. I become a man because of that, and I become, and I say a man, no, I become an outlaw biker because of that. I become a man without a conscience because of that. But I couldn't stuff it anymore. I couldn't bury it, and got me here. Joseph set me free. First, he scared the hell out of me. First, I wanted to kill him. I'm thinking he's one of them people that preyed on me as a child. And I went home. I took a book, not with a leather cover, a gray book, and I took a four-step inventory guide that man gave me, and I'm going to curse one time. You don't mind that, do you? Because I don't curse when I talk. I've changed my language, but at that moment, Joseph told me as he rubbed me down in this five-minute southern hug, rubbing me down and making me freaking squirmish and thinking this man wants to molest me. Then he told me, work the steps or die, motherfucker. And he gave me a gray book, and he gave me a four-step inventory guide. And I went home, and I took that gray book, and I took that four-step inventory guide, and I looked at our literature. We weren't NA. We thought we had the name Narcotics Anonymous. On one wall, there was nothing but AA literature. And on the other wall was nothing but drug and alcohol literature. And then there was a little place with a five IPs and a little white book. That's what Narcotics Anonymous experience was, between that hip pocket recovery. Bo just shared that he believes that was written through group conscience, and I believe it also, because that little white book spoke to me. That little white bucket went in my back of my pocket, and I took it to work, and I read it every day, and I wrote it on every day on it. It started changing my conscience is what it did. But when I got that gray book, and I slammed it on the table, and I threw all their literature in the garbage can, and we used to have 50, 60 people in our room back then. But guess what? They weren't NA members. I found out who truly was NA at that moment. How many honest would you call? I gave him three choices. See, when I did that with Joseph and he did that to me, I went out in the field and I saw seven bikers, and Bo knows most of them because some were in the literature movement, okay? And they were beautiful spirits. And I remember Charles Cade telling me when I told him that story, it's real simple. You gotta make a choice, Bill. You can kill that man and go to jail. You can do what he told you to do and work the steps or die, motherfucker. Now I'm done cursing. I might say one more. Yeah, because it's in the Santa Monica draft Bo was talking about in the minutes where he put in C'est la vie in there, motherfucker. Okay? So now I'm done, okay? I did it three times. But Charles was one of them guys that used to run around and say that all the time. They were excited people. I got excited with these people, and I wanted to be involved in what they were doing. And I go down to Bucks County, and then Joseph would tell me, you got to go to the next NA function there is. There weren't many NA functions back then. Be honest with you. Literature conferences, getting involved in service, got involved heavily in service. Terry talked about the Mid-Atlantic region foreman. I got involved in the Mid-Atlantic region. And I got involved in public information. I didn't want to hear them cell doors closing on me again. I did go in and speak finally in the prisons. And you know the nicest feeling that happened? You went in, you felt that cell door closing, and you start all the shit coming back up when you were in there. The nicest thing is when you walk back out that same night. And they didn't put you back in your cell. I remember that cell constantly. I remember that even that same prison when the guard would tell me, "We'll keep your cell warm for you. You'll be back." And I always came back. Well, this first time I spoke there, I didn't come back except to speak. Guess what? In that meeting was that murderer that night. He was there for an appeal to try to get out of prison. And the neatest thing that happened, I spoke, and this guy came across the table with a shiv to kill me. And another biker that I knew in that same club I rode with grabbed him and put him to the floor and says, "You're going back to prison with me, bitch, back to the state penitentiary. You leave him alone." And I walked out that night, and I realized I was free. I was free from that lifestyle, finally. But I did PI first, public information. The first helpline in Allentown was in my house. It was my home phone number. Someone just showed me a picture of my old phone number. All right? Someone just sent it to me on my phone, a picture of my old phone number. And you know, when I picked that phone up, I say Narcotics Anonymous first. Because you never knew who it was. I didn't have a caller ID. So I'd open, and I'd tell my wife the same thing. You say Narcotics Anonymous. I don't care if it's your mother calling. You say Narcotics Anonymous, can we help? If your mother asks, okay, you understand it's your mother now. Once she opens her voice, then you can get to that conversation. But the most important thing, you answer Narcotics Anonymous, can we help? Because it may be that addict out in the street looking for help. It may be that powerless addict that wants help. And they found that poster, and they called. Could we put posters up everywhere? It was my home phone number. Narcotics Anonymous, can we help? Terry Ryan shared he broke bread in my house. The people from New York came to my house a lot. I went up there a lot to work to help them. Narcotics Anonymous was something beautiful back then. We supported one another. When they talk about care, someone shared about love, care, empathy, compassion. That's what NA was back then. I want to tell you, when he said about the hippie thing, I could never be a good hippie. I'm being honest with you. I'd rather be a biker. I didn't like getting kicked around, so I didn't do that well. But guess what? When I learned about the care, the love, and the compassion and the empathy this fellowship has, and it was true. You know when it's not true, folks. You know when you're being lied to. We know that, don't we? It's like Terry said, this whole thing, and we heard a lot of stuff here, and I don't want to get into all that stuff. The reason I don't want to get into it, because you already heard it here today. So what I want to talk about is how you can make change and how you can change the world, because that's what I was told by Greg. Greg, and he talked about Greg Pierce when he went to San Francisco, and Jimmy sent him to Greg and then sent him back home to start in his area to start writing the basic texts, okay? And starting a literature movement. He became the first literature chair, he said, and it's the truth. That's honest. And then he became the second world lit chair, and he didn't run for the third. You think about that, selfless service, selfless. Them were words they used back then about being selfless. How do you become selfless is through the steps, through your surrender. She mentioned, Terry mentioned the guy named Pepe. Okay? I first heard Pepe, I was at the 7th Southern California Regional Convention. When Bo was talking about all the stuff that happened at the world, that's when they were trying to bribe me. Sending me a Bill talked about earlier. See, we went from Bill, went through other speakers, and went back with Bill, but a different Bill. I met him in Alaska because World Service sent me there. They sent me up to the upper end of the world, not realizing that these people were hungry for Narcotics Anonymous. They were hungry for a spirituality. They were hungry for our message. And they sent me there. And Alaska was never right after that. People started asking questions. because I'm not bought and I'm not sold. I went there to L.A. That's comical because they sent me to Alaska. Then in between, I had a daughter, my third daughter, actually. Because my first one's from my first wife who left me in prison. My next daughter is the one that had Gabriel. Anyone that follows me and knows about Gabriel, a miracle child. All right? A true miracle. But I think about that. Then I had Ashley. Ashley was born on March the 27th of 1987. I went to Alaska in March. I came home. Grateful Dave and a guy named Brian Higgins, who's passed, were in my house. They ripped out ceilings, okay, to get my daughter's room ready for her. Well, my other daughter was living in that room, but they put in new ceilings. And then Brian prayed at my whole house when my wife was in the hospital having my third daughter, okay? And then I opened up the Philadelphia Regional Convention that night, and I celebrated my son's 50th birthday there with my family. And they all my friends came to the room and sang happy birthday to my son. That's a miracle. People cared enough about my children. They made sure he had his 50th birthday. Well, my wife was in the hospital with his baby sister born on the same day as him. You think about stuff like that. It's about people. It's about people who cared enough about us. They cared enough about us. Bo cared enough about us to get a basic tech started. Joseph cared enough about us to get involved. We heard Jim Miller's wife speak here, Kathleen. And you know, and I brought stuff up here because Jim was also at Memphis. Okay? Jim was a photographer for cows. But Jim was at Memphis. He had to go home because he had pictures and stuff to take, and then he went right back to Memphis to make sure them books were shipped out that Bo was talking about. Making sure they were, because they were printed, people don't realize, but you can get all the pictures of that conference. Okay, we have them all. I met a guy in Nebraska talking about, and Bo probably remembers this, when they had three people in a closet, you'd have to knock on the door to get out, to go to the bathroom. This guy talked about that. And I was like, it's part of the literature conference I didn't know about, that there were three people in a closet that worked the full time in a closet. And he shared about that at a history day I did in Nebraska. It's a miracle he showed up. And some of them people that were in the Second World Lit Conference showed up. I want you to understand, them people were in a lot of pain because of some of the things that happened in Narcotics Anonymous. Someone wants to talk about world. I heard here today about all the world committees shutting down. And that's what our problems way before that. Let me tell you, it started right the minute this book came out, The Basic Text. This ain't the one, this is, someone made this one for me too. But it started when that basic text came out. There's a lot of stuff that, you know, when you deal with history, you'll understand. History is history, you can't change what happened. It's facts. So when you share history, it's also sprinkled in there with miracles that happen along the road too, and that's called recovery. There's some beautiful things that happen because of this literature movement. I think them are the stories that people understand, need to understand that we can do them things over and over again. And they're being done. Let me tell you, Jim wrote this book. It's called A Matter of Principle. It's a pretty cover. All right? Now it's in Swahili. Okay? This book in Swahili is called The Baby Blue. Nice cover. But you know what matters is what's inside. Their language is in there. Swahili done by Eastern Africans. Translated by addicts for addicts. The same way we wrote the book. They translated this. All right? That's a big difference. Can we write literature? Of course we can. This is a thing that group conscience through the steps. You don't have this on your table. Right? So you'll come up and have it. I'm going to give it to you, okay? So you know that we can write. Written by addicts, for addicts, okay? I want you to understand that stuff. All right? All right, we can write. This is a 12-step series, a booklet put together through articles. Not through the old NA way, but through the new old NA way. That magazine's existing. Go to nhelp.org. You can download them. There's some on that table. Take them with you. Anyone got 2 days clean here? Come get this. This is yours. All right? Steps. Without the steps, we can't do anything, folks. There is no miracle without them. They're for us. You know the miracle that happened with them steps, and I don't think it was planned, but it was a miracle that happened. And you look at the little white book in 1956, there's a miracle that happens in there. The miracle that happened in 63, 64 with the little white book, it says we admit it. It doesn't say I admit it, it says we. The power of the we was established when that change happened. And I don't think it was planned. I believe it was a miracle that touched the hearts of the writers. That switched that around for us and made it that Pepe could share about going through the steps with letting go of ego. Right from the start, he shared a step series, and it's on tape, on CD. And it's on that there, and he talks about letting go of our ego right from the start. Getting rid of self. Becoming part of the greater we, the greater whole. Becoming, you know, the third step, people keep saying, oh, my God, my God. I'm going to tell you the third step doesn't say that. It says we came to believe in the second step in a greater power than ourselves. It doesn't say higher power. Somebody switched that through the writing. Higher power. It says a greater power than all of us. How awesome that power got to be greater than all of us? It got to be such a power, and it went through the writing of our basic text. That power, when you read this great book, them words will pop off your off there. There's words that we should be, you know, and I found out about this about 10 years later after I had 10 years clean, and I stopped hearing the language of the great book. Because we start to get separated. I stopped hearing that language and I thought I was going crazy. I know I didn't create this language. So I took the gray book, I pulled it out, the one Joseph gave me, and I start studying it again. And then we formed a home group off of that. We start studying the gray book since 1989. There's been a continuous gray book meeting Friday night in Allentown, Pennsylvania, where I'll be celebrating my 43 years clean on November the 18th at that meeting. Everyone's invited that wants to come. There's a guy here, I've said, I'm going to give him time to celebrate his 6 year with us because he doesn't have a home group that meets physically. So Frank's going to come from Queens, and I'm going to give him the first part of the meeting where he'll have 20, 30 minutes to talk about his 6 years or how he ever wants to deal with it. And then we're going to go over my because of you, I am able to celebrate 43 years. Because of you. Not because of anybody else. It's because of you. When Bo talks about one day clean, at Memphis you had someone one day clean. All right? That were included in the writing of the basic text. You got to think about that power. That it's not about are your ages. I don't want to hear some, oh, I'm 19. I could care less if you're 19. I could care how we're going to help you, what you want to do about your problem, and how we can help you. Our age should not matter. We're to become faceless, sexless, all right, colorless. We're to become so spiritually aligned that I only see eyes looking back and I see your spirit. That's what this book talks about. By working the steps, we let go of all them impurities that we've been indoctrinated by. We let go of that here. And we get to look at you as an addict and only an addict and what you want to do about your problem and how we can help. That's what I was taught when I came here. That's what I was taught from the day I got here and met these people that were real NA members that cared enough for me to start the process of the writing. Included me. They didn't exclude me. It wasn't exclusionary. And we built the Mid-Atlantic region, and it actually went from Virginia Beach, actually the tip of North Carolina, up to Maine at one time. Largest region in the world at that point of time. And there was another region down in Georgia, and the Florida region had started. There weren't many regions in the whole United States at this point when I got clean. Like I told you, when I got clean, it was Eastern Pennsylvania. Then the Mid-Atlantic formed, and it became this humongous thing of people traveling from one end to the other to support one another, to carry a message of hope and promise of freedom from active addiction. Think about that. People cared enough to give their time, their energy to be part of this movement. It's a movement that's changed the world. What's upsetting with an older member? Because we don't see it no more. We don't see that. We see things that we don't like to see. And you know what it brings out? Emotions, pain. It becomes a fear for our people. And Bo can remember when I stood in the World Service Conference and said what we're taking from the newer members is that spiritual realm that we gave us. When I told the conference, when you start shutting down and start transferring your services away from the group, actually away from the area, from the region to the world, we are stealing spirituality from the newcomer. You think about that. We have stole that from you. And when Jim said, I had to make my amends that one day at one of our things, and he says, I owe the fellowship an amends because I buried my head in the sand. I'm going to tell you why people buried their heads in the sand, because they couldn't take the pain of watching it happen. The miracle, they call it the Memphis miracle, when they watch this here be shut down, be taken away, and be thrown into these committees that people said, oh, it's because the committees were shut down. No. It was, you took the power from the home group, the greatest vehicle ever. We took that from you. It's still there, though. There's groups that are doing that. They're restoring the home group and its authority through God, through the traditions. Through the traditions. The traditions of Narcotics Anonymous are that powerful. They're that powerful, we abide them by them. We have to abide by them, nobody else. It's our responsibility, as Jimmy Kennan said in his 20th celebration. And I know the words well because I use them all the time. It's our responsibility to carry this message. Our responsibility, nobody else's. And only we can do it. Only we. Nobody else can do it for us. Quit giving our services away. Get it back to the home group. And let's become a miracle program again. You know what we're missing in the program? Bo knows it. Anyone that's got over 40 years clean knows it. It's desperation. People had desperation when they walked through the door. People ain't hitting bottoms anymore. They're being forced into places. And they're being treated with drugs. He talked about what these grounds were. Well, guess what? We're back to that. We're back to that. 107,000 addicts died last year of what? Fentanyl? 108 are supposed to die this year. Same thing. He talked about some outside issues. I compare it to that, though. We lost 58,000 men in Vietnam, and the world went nuts. We lost 107,000 in 1 year. Vietnam went from 1959 to 1975 when we finally pulled our last, when Saigon collapsed. In 1 year, we lost 107,000, and the world just doesn't say a word. Our responsibility is to make sure we don't lose 107,000. Our responsibility is to carry the message that an addict can find these doors and find hope. That's our responsibility. Are we willing to bind together and carry this message? I look at this room tonight. There's about 50 of us left. There were about 165 here today. There were some more here last night that didn't come back today. So we had about 200 people here this weekend, and I'm excited about that 200 that showed up. I want to tell you something. I'm excited. No one knew the numbers because it was a free thing. But there's no such thing as free. That's why we passed the, and allowed you to contribute when we passed that basket. Because we all need to be responsible and contribute our fair share. No one's here to tell me what my fair share is. Only my heart knows that. No one's here to tell Bo what his fair share is and the time and energy he put into it. It's your time and energy also that matters. People gave their lives up to write the basic text. One member shares he went to Second World Lit Conference. He sold his brand new refrigerator. Another guy sold the washer and dryer, brand new. They went there. They participated. They made a way to be there. They dedicated their time and energy. Another guy led seven other bikers to sell their plasma. They also like to say your blood, but plasma comes from your blood. Sold it so we could have money there to buy stamps and envelopes and ribbons on your typewriters to make sure we get the information out, as Bo talked about, the information being disseminated to the Fellowship Narcotics Anonymous. And then we come out, you are the book. We have them flyers yet. We got them in digital form put up there in files. They're there yet. You are the book. You know how much impact that meant, that simple thing? You are the book. You are the book. And guess what? You're still the book. Jimmy Kay said, we write for those that are not yet here. Dawned on me the other day when I'm thinking about it, as I woke up in the middle of the night and I prayed for 4 hours because God wouldn't let me sleep. God wanted me to look at things. And I thought about it and I've come to this conclusion. There's two things that are such a matter in Narcotics Anonymous. The first thing is, Jimmy Kennan touched on it, Greg Pierce touched on it, it's called, they touched on something, but it keeps in their third, a threefold disease. It's not a three, it's a fourfold. I'm going to tell you why it's a fourfold. Your mind, you've got a mental part, and then you have an emotional part. And you have a heart only where God lives. And you have your physical addiction. What I say? Physical, right? Mental, spiritual, emotional. Fourfolds. You lost them in addiction. First you lost your emotional stability. Then you lost your spiritual condition. Then you lost your mental conditioning. And then you start losing your physical condition because you used. Right? We recover the same way. What's the first thing that comes back? And everyone say, oh, 90-day wonders, what happens? Oh, they get physical healthy. And then their mind manipulates them and thinks they're good. And then they go back. And they wonder why they keep going in and out. You know why? Because they didn't deal with the emotional side. The first beginning when you come in, and Jimmy talked about it, dealing with that thing that's going to take you out there time and time again. Don't allow your mind to manipulate not dealing with that first. But Greg talked about a lot about that also. And they touched on that. And I'm reading Greg's writing, and I'm reading the basic text, and I'm reading some of Jimmy's old writings. I'm listening to some of his old tapes. So hold it. 4 hours, I realized this. But what I realized, though, what I was going over when they started Narcotics Anonymous. Why do I want to go there? Because you think about it. Think about this. They didn't start the first meeting in July of 1953. They created the first service committee, the home group. They didn't call it that. What'd they call it? Same word they used in the other fellowship. The steering committee. They planned to start the first meeting. They created bylaws for this fellowship first. They created a commitment first. And then they carried the message and created a meeting. Think about that. So the home group was started before the meeting started. The home group puts on the meeting so the atmosphere recovery can be maintained so we can 12-step people every meeting we're at. We carry the message, right? Ain't that in the 12th step? We carry the message to the still suffering addict. Where do they show up? At our meeting. Then the home group members can carry the message. And it dawned on me in that four-hour prayer that I missed that part. They started the group, and then they started the meeting. As most people do when they first start a meeting, they get together with some people and they plan to get a meeting. They go and they find a facility and they do all these things. They get the literature. They open the door and then they sit there and wait for addicts to show up. And some of us sit a long time till that first addict shows up. Maybe two of us or three of us to get the meeting off the ground. And we plan for this and then we do the PI. We do the stuff to get the message out there. And we do everything we can do to people show up. You know how long that really takes, folks? Are you committed to do that? 3 years. I look at everything in 3 years. It took us 3 years to get. Then the day-by-day group, we changed the name to Recovery First Group in Allentown, Pennsylvania, our first Narcotics Anonymous meeting. It took us almost three years to get rid of all the literature of the other fellowship. We went back to three members again. Then we start doing the PI, and we start doing the efforts, and the meetings start to grow. And we got involved heavily. But that's so important, and we can never miss that. When someone fills you up with the Spirit and gets you to run off and start that meeting, make a 3-year commitment. Joseph didn't tell me to go to 90 and 90. It's in our literature. Where'd it come from? It didn't come from us. We brought it over from somewhere else, 90 and 90. Where's it mostly talked about? In rehabs. Oh, you get to go 90 and 90, right? You know, I'll tell you what happens after 99. What do you do then? What do you do? Joseph told me a year to a year and a half. And when he told me that, I had a year and a half clean. And I said, Joe, I already did. He said, I want to hear what you did. I want to know what you're willing to do. Show me surrender. Get out of the road, Bill. You're in the road. He helped me. I went to 5 years of daily meetings, missed one, and ran back for five more. All right? I don't like this. I can't get to meetings. I raised children being in Narcotics Anonymous, three of them. I worked in a steel mill. My wife worked. I still went to a daily meeting. It's getting rid of all the excuses, folks. Getting rid of the excuses of what we can do, not what we can't do, is what Joseph taught me. I think about everything that man taught me and helped me with. And I can tell you miracles are happening around the world right now. Miracles. I'm going to tell you right from here, from my mouth. I can tell you Iran printed 500,000 basic packs without the World Services. World Service got upset. And I'm tired of what's going on the internet, folks, because they don't know what's going on. I want to tell you what happened. I've been working in there for 8 months through Zoom because of a thing that you were on with me. A history day on Zoom. I don't know how many of us spoke that day. I was the last speaker that day. I know when Bo spoke, there was over 1,000 people there. I think some dwindled off. I think there might have been 600, 700 when I spoke. But it didn't matter. Who heard me was it these people from Iran. They contacted me and asked me if I'd be willing to talk with them through Zoom. And start setting up stuff. And I start doing this every week with them. They start meeting and they start asking questions. Then they want to know, where you been all these years? I said, I've been here. I've been out there every day serving Narcotics Anonymous and every addict in it. I didn't go anywhere. I still had the same message that I had when I met Bo. I still had that same message when I met Joseph, when I met Greg, and Greg became my sponsor later. My message don't change. But I can tell you 700,000 addicts in Iran got desperation. They want to hear our message. They no longer want to be controlled by a service structure. They want to feel that they are part of this and their voices heard. Everybody wants to know their voices being heard. I don't care who you are. You want to know someone hears you, folks. I can tell you, as being a big-time wrestling coach out there at one time, and I was, I coached all the way up to the Olympic Center. I put kids on the Olympic ladder. All right? I dedicated my life after Grateful Dave's court case. I dedicated my life because N.A. became a lonely place, so I got involved in wrestling because my little boy brought home a flyer. And it said he wanted to join a wrestling team. So then I had to let him know, this ain't Hulkamania. All right? This is not Randy Man, Macho Man, coming off the top rope with the people's elbow. It's not the Ultimate Warrior, you know, holding on the ropes and vibrating his ass off and coming out like a madman. And this ain't the Undertaker. All right? The true Undertaker. It's none of that stuff, folks. Doing the tombstone. This is real wrestling, son. Can't do none of that stuff. We got to learn how to do it right. So I hired the best in the world to train my son. I created a business out of, for, not for me, but for my son to have partners. I want my son, if you're going to do this thing, we're going to do it the right way. We're going to do it the way. And I did the same thing in wrestling that I learned how to do in NA. Did the same thing. I built the largest wrestling school in the world. 600 athletes at one time that I trained. Them kids, I put them in the best position in life. If I saw a parent that abused their child, he became my partner in my room. And I'm being honest, I abused a couple parents over this. I made sure they felt the pain on the back of their neck when I clubbed them. I made sure that you'd never treat your son in that manner again. He is your investment as your boy, and when he grows up, you want him coming home with your grandchildren. You want a relationship. Where did I learn about relationships? Right here. I could see these kids' pain, and I helped them through it. I put some of these kids in the best universities in the country. I put them in all military academies. I made sure these kids, they have a life after wrestling, that they actually have a future in what they're doing. I couldn't do that without N.A. I sat out in Iowa, and anyone that knows wrestling knows a man named Dan Gable. Or anyone that knows wrestling knows the Brands Brothers. And when the Brands Brothers are going to Dan Gable and want to know who the hell that coach is, and Gable said, you don't need to know who that coach is, that athlete of his just beat your Iowa kid guy's ass. That should be your concern, how you're going to make that guy better. You know, that's a compliment from the greatest wrestler ever in America named Dan Gable. That's a compliment. It's the same thing here, though, folks. We should want the greatest message being told over and over again. We should want every newcomer, when they walk in, that they want to stay. They want to be part of this lifestyle. I'm more concerned about that than anything. You heard a lot of stuff here this weekend so far. I want to tell you the greatest message last night, sitting around the campfire. We all came to the same conclusion, about 50 of us, by the end. And that's with total abstinence from any mood-changing substance, mind or come. How we get there, we may differ sometimes, but what comes out is the same things about care, compassion, love, empathy is the answer to get that message out to every addict. To have them want what we have to offer, to make it attractive for them to not use drugs to treat drugs, but want what we have and what people have lived in this program. That's an inside issue. It's not an outside issue, folks. When you come to that point and want help, we need to give you all the help you need. We need to spend the time. You heard Terry talk about putting people on our couch. We did that back then. I can be honest with you, people. Many of people slept in detox on my couches. At one time, I had six people living in every bedroom in my house and every couch in my house. All right? So, guess what? We helped addicts. It doesn't matter. It helped me stay clean. This is all about being clean and passing this on to the next generation, to the next human being. And I'm not concerned about where I'm headed in life. I'm concerned about what I'm doing in life. I'm concerned that I'm involved and I'm not dealing with outside issues here in Narcotics Anonymous. I want to talk about inside issues. what we're doing to make that more available. What are we doing as addicts to carry this message? I can tell you, I know what I'm doing. I know Bo got to go to Russia. I know Terry Ryan got to go to Russia. I know Vito got to go to Russia. And I know I got to go to Russia. I can tell you the impact of four men going to Russia has been a big impact in the Russian fellowship. I can tell you that. I can tell you what every Russian asked me, and that when I did that 10 hours on Saturday, 10 hours on Sunday, and then 2 hours each meeting for them 10 days I was there, I can tell you they wanted to know, how do you know God exists? Well, I told them, you feel God's presence. If you can't feel it, God don't exist. You got to feel it. How do you get there? Through the steps. Through being together, praying together. You know, when we close up tonight, I want you to time our silent prayer. If it's not at least 60 seconds to 120 seconds, we have cut you short. How many times I've heard this here? We're going to have a silent prayer for the still suffering addict, and all of a sudden it's going, God grant us. And you're like, I didn't get to pray yet. I didn't get to pray for that addict who still suffered, and I didn't get to reflect on how I carried the message to him. And it's rush. We shouldn't rush. We shouldn't rush for that. We should really look at, first of all, what are we doing? Second of all, have we welcomed them? Have we kept them here? And how are we going to get this message to the one that's out on the street suffering? When I look at the Kensington, that's part of Philadelphia, folks. When I look at that, it disgusts me because I see people from about a mile long on a street. And I've never seen addicts the way they look in Kensington right now. They look like zombies. They look like the night of the living dead down there. And this is in broad daylight, folks. No one's doing a thing. Addicts are dying there, folks. That used to be our major thing. Addicts are dying, and how are we going to help them not die no more? What's our responsibility in getting them here? That's my concern here tonight. And I know each one of you can commit a little bit more time to this. I know each one of you can dig down in your spirit. I know I can dig down and find a little bit more time. I heard a story one time. If you want something done, find a busy person. Because the guy that's on the couch watching the TV, he's never going to find a time because he's too busy becoming a couch potato. So find someone that's really active doing stuff. They find a way. I'm going to tell you, everyone that was involved back then, I can tell you, they served in a group, they served in an area, they served in a region, and they served in a world. They were my friends, that's where they all. And we had our hats, put them on our head. You could put another one there, put another one there, put another one, put another one. Then we're the people that made the difference, okay? And you know, one thing we got to do was really neat. We got to go to Disneyland together. Right, Bo? We got to go to Disneyland. And we got to hang out with a bunch of addicts that were serving, got to take a day off and go to Disneyland. And we got to enjoy one another's presence. Took a day off from the World Service Conference, went to Disneyland ourselves after it was over. Not during it, but after it. And no one paid for it except us. And we had a great, back then they used to have something that said, you need the time, and you need the money. They didn't say, we're going to pay your way. You got to have the financial means to serve. Larry North was a beautiful spirit. Larry used to fill that white van up with newcomers constantly and take them up and down the East Coast, take them wherever he was going, and serve us. He taught me how to be principally oriented in service. Larry North taught me about service. Joseph Proctor taught me about steps. Greg taught me about the traditions. See? And then I found out how they work as a glove. Togetherness. All 24 principles. I don't abide by any concepts, folks. They don't belong with us. Never did, never will. They're for a business. You run a business, use them. They may work for your business, but they don't work for us. I can guarantee concepts do not work for us, folks. But them 12 steps and 12 traditions work perfectly for us. Work together, unify one another, edify people. Because I may not be the person to sponsor everyone, but someone else might be able to. Don't ever talk bad about someone's sponsor. It might be the only person that can throw through them a lifeline. Don't judge. Yeah, I learned that before I even got to NA. Don't judge or be judged. So I got a lot of people passing judgment on me and policemen and judges trying to throw the key away on me. Never looked at my responsibility. I looked at it when I got here. I learned about my responsibility. I learned where that freedom comes from. I learned where that surrender comes from. Are we ready? I want to ask you, are you willing to make the commitment? If everyone in this room can put their hand up, I'll stop sharing. All right? Are you ready? If you can't put your hand up, I got to speak for another hour. And I'm being honest with you, folks. I can speak for another hour. I can speak for another hour and a half. I'm telling you, I can do this thing, folks. Are you willing to make the commitment? Give me an eye. And if you're not, let me know. Because we need to have a 12-step meeting with you all night long then. And I want to tell you something. I know I can stay up for 9-10 days straight because I did it in Russia. I do it in the Netherlands every year. I expanded my mind. And my mind is not going to trick me into going to sleep. You get through that first 24 hours, I'm real good after that, folks. As long as someone's willing to talk, I'm willing to sit there and listen to you, folks. I do it in the Netherlands every year. Just got back from over there. September, we ran the European Fellowship Service Conference, the most spiritual event I've been at this year. And now this is a spiritual event. I'm not looking who's not here. I'm looking who's here, folks. Are we willing to do this thing? And if we are, we can close up in prayer right now. And we can think about it in a long, silent prayer for the still suffering addict and how we carry the best to them. Thank you for allowing me to share and be part of your life today.
Huh? I'm disappointed.
What?
I had two CDs out.
Well, I did this.